This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It's Friday, everybody, and it's mailbag time, but not for a little while. We have to catch you up on some of the major training camp storylines, some big-time injuries, the 49ers signing a wide receiver. Did Christian McCaffrey just become worse? You're like, what? I'll explain. And Jamie, never save the good stuff for the mic check. What were we just discussing? What trivia question were we just discussing? Or guessing at?
Well, first we were discussing how you azer statted your dentist appointment. We were discussing some James Cook stats and info.
We were. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but you had a trivia question and we are.
Oh, yes. Since 2000, there have been two back-to-back rushing champions. Can you name the two?
We named one already, LaDainian Tomlinson. And if I was going to give a serious guess, the guess is Derrick Henry.
This is the player who led the NFL in rushing yards consecutive seasons since 2001 was LaDainian Tomlinson. I guessed Zeke and I was wrong. Thomas guessed Sean Alexander, which I think was a very good guess, but Dave's saying no.
Zeke was a better guess. Sorry, Schaefer.
I have no idea. Priest Holmes.
Dave is correct. It is Derrick Henry.
Oh, all right.
All right. So we'll talk about why James
this is the
Cook,
greatest day of my life
as the rushing yards leader last year is trying to buck a very troubling trend. But first,
recent trend.
Yes. Mm. But first, do you know which wide receiver scored 17 or more fantasy points in four of his first five games, had a 28.4% target share, and then had a heel injury and stunk the rest of the year? Dave, who was it?
His first name is Tyshon, but we know him as Debo Samuel.
Yes, Debo Samuel. Just a reminder, he's going to be 31. Actually, I think in January. I think this is his age 30 season. I'll tell you that in one moment here. He's 30. He's 30. 30. He got off to a very good start. And McLaurin played in three of those five games, left one of the games injured. But, you know, Debo was off to a good start. I watched some tape this morning. He looked okay. I mean, it wasn't the old Debo Samuel, but he wasn't bad. Because I remember watching tape later in the year, and he just looked so slow and so compromised. And he was playing through a heel injury. And here's another stat, guys. Christian McCaffrey in his San Francisco era has averaged, he has had a 12.6% target share with Debo Samuel on the field and an 18.7% target share with Debo Samuel off the field. And it kind of makes sense because Debo is a very short area target. They'll give him screen passes. They'll do the things that McCaffrey does with Debo Samuel. So what's your reaction to this? Is Ricky Pearsall, he might have to, I mean, he's could miss the season. We're not there yet. But anything's possible Pearsall. Jamie, what's your reaction to this Debo Samuel signing for San Francisco?
I want to see what the health status is for Christian Kirk. I want to know what the role is going to be for Deshaun Stribling, but I think you're looking at it right now, knowing that there's a history of Kyle Shanahan and Debo Samuel. By the way, Debo, according to NFL research, Debo is the only wide receiver in NFL history with 20-plus receiving touchdowns and 20-plus rushing touchdowns. So interesting little note there for him. I think when you're looking at this, like, makes me want to draft Mike Evans, makes me want to draft George Kittle if he's healthy, and then just kind of figure out the rest and maybe just let somebody else chase Debo's name because, look, he's had a hard time, I think, with his conditioning. I don't think that's unfair to say based on what we saw from him early in his career. You know, so hopefully he's in shape. He's older. Him, McCaffrey, the receiving core, like there's a lot of still moving parts, even though there's still familiarity there. I don't know. I'm probably not going to draft Debo Samuel personally.
Dave?
I'll draft him, but it's going to be in the double-digit rounds, and it's going to be with the idea that he's a good bench receiver, not a great bench receiver. You know how I feel about DK Metcalf. I'd much rather have DK Metcalf. You know how I feel about Jordan Tyson. I'm taking Jordan Tyson. There aren't a ton of name receivers that I will wait for after Debo Samuel, but I can't help but think he's going to get a good opportunity. We know what he's done before in San Francisco. And I just think as a guy that, yeah, maybe he'll be a bench clogger, but we did see some good stuff from him before he got hurt last year. And if he's going to be in that range of 6 touches per game, remember, he might get a carry or two along the way and some design screens and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe he can get you 10 to 12 PPR points. And so I'm going to be all right with him as long as it's with the late round pick, with the understanding that I'm not expecting a big year from him. He's just going to be like a good bench piece, good bye week replacement wide receiver. And at this point, the bodies are falling down all over again for the 49ers. I'd say that they're going to need Deebo Samuel, but there's always a chance that he also incurs an injury just like he did last year. It's all the more reason why you don't chase the name. Like Jamie said, he's not worth that round 8 or 9 pick. You got to wait till 10, 11, somewhere in there.
It's just kind of amazing that they added another 30-plus-year-old skill position player to this team. They're so old. They're so old. And I'll just say this, kind of put it in context for me, at least. If Stephon Diggs signs in Washington, I'd rather have Diggs than Deebo.
Fair. Yep, me too.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think Stephon Diggs is one of my favorite draft values right now. He goes so late. And if he goes to Washington, that's probably the favorite. I would like that. It's just hopefully it happens soon. Christian Kirk, by the way, is going to be 30 this year. You may not even think of him as old, but
that's crazy.
He's going to be 30 in November. All right, last question about this.
Actually,
I have another question later about Brock Purdy, but who is the second 49ers wide receiver that you're drafting right now?
Probably still Deebo.
Technically, that's Deebo Samuel.
Okay. All right, I've got a lot of segments today. We're going to go kind of fast on them. We're going to have a fast-paced show. Your emails later at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We're also going to read some of your draft-a-thon questions, but I'm looking at this. Here's a quick segment called Do You Buy These ADPs? I got 4 guys that I feel like we'd all jump for joy if we got at least 3 of them at this ADP. And the ADP is pretty consistent right now. Fantasy Pros, CBS, and Draft Sharks consensus. Rashee Rice at the 2.
You mean all the crazy people who like to draft early?
but then you look at like Rashee Rice at the 2-3 turn, and someone, there are going to be multiple players that are so good that are going at the 2-3 turn that you're just like, how are they there? It could be Pickens. It could be Nico. It could be A.J. Brown. It could be Derrick Henry. Right now, one of those players is Rashee Rice at the 2-3 turn. Zay Flowers at the 3-4 turn. Ladd McConkey, 46th, so almost at the 4-5 turn. Mike Evans at the 5-6 turn. Do you buy those ADPs, Jamie? Rashee Rice, 2-3 turn. Zay Flowers, 3-4. McConkey, I'll just simplify it and say at the 4-5. And Evans at the 5-6.
Yeah, I think the only one that kind of stands out is Rice because of where I think we have him ranked, our thoughts about him as a player and what he's capable of doing. I think the other guys are somewhat priced appropriately. Like I would take Zay Flowers probably at the earliest, the middle of round 3, but the back end of the middle of round 3. I think Evans is in the right range. I think McConkey's in the right range. The one thing I will say, though, when you're doing drafts now, because this happened, I did a draft, an analyst draft, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and Rice was buried in the projections. And so, like, you know, when we draft on CBS, I can toggle by my rankings myself, you know, Dave, his rankings, Heath, his rankings. The site that I was using, I was just going off their projections and then finding the players that I wanted. And I was like, wow, Rice is really like pushed way down. I don't know why, you know, at what point they posted those, but like, I don't know if people weren't searching for him or what. I got him at the 3-4 turn.
Wow.
Wow.
So like, yeah. It was like, okay, if he falls, I'll take him. If he's still there, I'll take him. Obviously I'm taking him. I can't wait to take him. Here he is. I'm taking him. You know, like it was just incredible value, you know? So you see this sometimes if you sort by ADP, you see it. Sometimes you sort by other projections from other people. Clearly there's going to be some values that you find. I think just now, again, like the ADP data is great for us to use as talking points. I just think we're going to see some, not necessarily dramatic shifts, but shifts where some of these players, the injured players that are healthy, Malik Nabers, for example, you know, they get pushed up. And then conversely, you know, some of the guys that are going to deal with injuries because they're happening way too fast, they're going to get pushed down.
Okay. So because I've been taking McConkey at the 3-4 turn, and he's going 46th. Evans, if I can really get Evans 60th overall, it's going to truly affect my draft strategy. I'm going to not feel like I have to take a wide receiver at the 3-4 turn. I might, but I think Evans, I really like Evans quite a bit. And I suspect with the Pearsall news that Evans will move up. But we'll see. All right. Dave, let's talk about tight end leftovers. You actually wanted to talk about Juwan Johnson, I think, yesterday, and we never really got to it. You felt like he deserved a little bit of a mention. This could honestly be 30 seconds, but do you think Juwan Johnson could play his way into being on fantasy rosters for much of the year?
He could. It just comes down to how big of a step Jordan Tyson takes, because if Tyson's good and Olave's okay, and Olave just got paid a new contract, so I think the Saints think he's going to be okay, then I don't know how much that really leaves for Juwan Johnson. Someone suggested in our comments yesterday that Juwan Johnson is the tight end to snag late. And I would offer this question. Would you rather carry Juwan Johnson into a week one matchup against Detroit, which is a favorable matchup given the state of the safeties and the linebackers in Detroit right now? Or would you rather stash somebody else? And then if Juwan Johnson has a good game, you could always go and pick him up off waivers after week one. I think there are too many other tight ends that I like better than Juwan Johnson. But if it's a tight end premium league or a really deep league, your rosters are super deep, say 7+ bench spots, Juwan Johnson deserves one of them.
I think there's a couple, maybe 3 or 4, that these guys we kind of want to forget about, but they'll still be productive. Juwan Johnson's one. Dalton Schultz is another. I think you can maybe throw Hunter Henry in there, you know, just looking at what he's done at times over his career. Maybe we get a TJ Hockenson bounce back, but for me, really, it's just Juwan Johnson and
Schultz.
Dalton Schultz. But you look at the circumstances for both those guys, where both were really good last year. The addition of Jordan Tyson, and then for the Texans, it's what we keep hearing about Jaden Higgins and then Tank Dell being back. You know, and so if everybody's healthy on those respective rosters, I just think those veteran tight ends lose a little bit. Yeah. And so, like, what Dave was talking about with Juwan Johnson carrying him in the season, the first thing I thought of was, okay, if George Kittle's out, that's not a bad pivot play instead of just chasing Jake Tonjes and trying to handcuff the 49ers. Like, maybe you get something from Juwan Johnson. He produces well throughout the early part of the season, maybe while Jordan Tyson is working his way into understanding the NFL, or unfortunately, as we've seen from him in his career, maybe he's hurt. You have Juwan Johnson as a trade chip once Kittle comes back. So I think there's a lot of different ways to play it with some of these late round tight ends. It's the question of, like, somebody in the chat just brought up Gunnar Helm. Like, I think that's the type of guy you want to gravitate toward because he could pop as a second year guy now that Chig Okonkwo is gone. And so, like, I would rather chase the younger player that I think has more upside as opposed to maybe the veteran that I think could take a step back. But that's the kind of, you know, decision you have to make, is proven production versus unproven production, and which guy can, you know, maybe be better moving forward in their careers. So, like, when you're comparing, you know, a Helm, a Sadiq, to a Schultz and a Johnson, those veterans have been great. But again, those younger players could be fantastic.
I wasn't going to chuckle until I saw Dave smile there. But anyway,
I'm just enjoying life. I'm having the best day ever.
Okay. I guess we can wrap it up. We'll take a quick break. And just rookies and second year guys. Like, we kind of shortchanged the Rondae Gadsden yesterday. I just feel like we need to talk a little bit about him. Elijah Arroyo. Could any of these second year guys that were not, obviously there's the big three second year guys, but could any of the other ones, because the 2025 tight end class on draft day was really exciting. Can any of the other guys, Ferguson, Arroyo, whoever I'm missing, Gunnar Helm, jump out? And then what about Sadiq? What about Eli Raritan in New England? We'll be right back with that. And we've got a question about Sam Laporta. We've got an FFT Open update. We've got a fun segment and a game called What's It Gonna Take for You to Blank? Don't ask me how I come up with these things. It's just a gift. We'll be
right back. What's it gonna take for you to get to the break?
Right here. We'll be right back.
Good.
Oh man, every day I'm getting killed for this auction strategy thing. I'm not back to, I haven't quite gotten back to looking at the comments. So
I wonder,
live comments.
So you and I are going to see each other this weekend, and you're going to be around a bunch of other fantasy analysts. And we know several of them, a few of them listen to our show. I wonder if anybody's going to bring it up to you in person.
They are now, Jamie. Thank you. It's a lock now. Thank you for that. Dave, are there any rookie tight ends?
I'm looking at you, Joey, right? I'm looking at you.
Rookie. Oh, Joey Wright for sure. Rookie tight ends or second year tight ends other than Loveland, Fan, and Warren that you think.
Not chasing. I'm not really chasing any of them in typical redraft leagues, obviously in keeper and dynasty leagues. Honestly, Sadiq is probably going to be the one that I'm the most after. Let's see how training camp unfolds over the next couple of weeks and if we hear some great things about Sadiq. But the one that I think most fantasy managers gravitated toward early in the offseason was Gadsden. And that was especially after McDaniel landed in L.A. But look who else has landed in L.A. Like Njoku is part of the tight end group there. It's a deep group. And that this is a team that's already going to be, at least based on history of Mike McDaniel's history, playing at a slow pace, maybe not necessarily throwing a ton. And Ladd McConkey is the guy that we've kind of earmarked as being the top target getter in that offense. Quentin Johnson, Trey Harris will be in there too. So I'm not real interested in Gadsden at this point. But the nice thing is that these are all tight ends that do have some potential. You should be able to find them all off the waiver wire if they have a good week one or week two or even later in the year and you see that there's some potential for them. Yeah, you can grab them off the waiver wire. You don't have to spend the draft pick.
Jamie,
I think the problem with like Ferguson, for example, is there's so many tight ends in Los Angeles, you know, and so the hope would be, and, you know, it kind of goes back to some of the offseason news. They didn't trade for A.J. Brown, knee injury, not injury, but they didn't get him. They didn't draft Mekhi Lemon, who was a potential target for them at 16 when they took Ty Simpson. And so do they essentially use one of their tight ends? And Ferguson, I think, makes the most sense to be their third receiver. And so that's the type of player you're looking for, like to take a jump in terms of opportunity. But again, Parkinson's still there. Higbee's still there. They drafted another tight end, you know, so there's just a lot of players and bodies and, you know, moving parts, which is what makes the Rams offense so fun and unique, but also frustrating when it's not Puka and Adams. Like any one of these tight ends, I think if it was just, hey, we're running a traditional offense with, you know, 11 personnel and, you know, maybe even 12 personnel, but 11 personnel. And that tight end is getting featured. We saw it once upon a time. You guys made the joke a couple of days ago about Higbee. Like that could be just amazing for one particular guy, but there's four of them. So I think that makes it frustrating.
Okay. We have a question, Jamie, from Travis, and this will end our tight end discussion. Do you have any hesitation taking Sam Laporta with a mid-round pick if you already drafted either Gibbs or Amon-Ra St. Brown?
Not really. I think you've seen throughout the 3 years that these guys have been together that they've had the opportunities to produce at a high level. They might have the consistency rating for those guys. But look, this is going to be a team that has one of the best schedules. They play so many games indoors. I think from week 5 through 17, they play outdoors twice. One of those is at Miami. So it's just unreal what their schedule could be. Their defense could be atrocious. That's a plus for those guys. So no, I wouldn't run away from it. But you know, if you're debating Laporta, Pitts, Fannin, Kraft, like those four guys, I think are the tier that they're all kind of grouped together. Maybe pivot just to, you know, diversify your roster a little bit.
I'd be worried about Laporta and Jameson Williams. We've talked about how it seems like one of those two can be good in a given week, but it's rare when both of them are good. It's really rare when both of them get 6+ targets in the same game. If we set the number at 10 PPR points for Sam Laporta last year, he had 5 games with at least 10 PPR points. I remember he only played 9 games. At least one of Gibbs or Amon-Ra St. Brown had 13 PPR points in the same game. And there were two games where they were both outstanding while Sam Laporta had 10 PPR points. So I don't think it's a deal breaker. This is one of those offenses where there will be weeks where many people will eat. And so if you want to load up on Lions, it's a best ball strategy to stack teams from the same offense. It probably won't hurt you, especially with Laporta getting a lift in efficiency and opportunities with the change in play caller.
Yeah, and you could also, you know, it's not the most ideal situation, but you could also just go all in and get Jared Goff also, so you'll have some huge weeks. I tournament style format, but like in the fishbowl, that's exactly what I did with Gibbs, Laporta, and Goff.
I think at this point, I want to take Goff over Purdy. with the schedule.
Not far off with you, yeah.
I mean, yeah, because Purdy has such a terrible schedule. Goff has one cold weather game all year. And I just think at some point we have to acknowledge the 49ers receiving situation is less than ideal, super old and super injured.
Well, it's also, you brought this up, I think, recently, like Purdy feasted on the worst teams in the league last year.
Yeah.
Down and so stretch, he's typically been like a 20-21 point per game scorer, which is great. But 24.9 last year.
Yeah.
Probably not who he is.
And he's a really good rusher. So maybe you say, well, four point per passing touchdown, Purdy, six Goff, but they're pretty far off in ADP, as I recall. All right.
One more thing, just because there was a thing in the chat about Okonkwo. Somebody asked, like, why are we giving Okonkwo the Zach Ertz production or treatment, whatever it was. It's not, I don't think anybody's saying that, but it's just the potential that he could do that. And so right now you're looking at it as he could be number two on the team in targets, and Jaden Daniels had a good rapport with Zach Ertz, so that tight end production could be there for him. It was like 10.7 PPR points per game, 10.4 PPR points per game for Ertz in 2024. I think it's just, again, looking at these late round tight end options, once you get past the top 11 guys, you could say Goddard and Andrews are safer because their resumes are better. For me, like, I'm going to shoot for upside when I'm trying to get one of those late round tight ends. Probably take two of them, but Okonkwo to me is my favorite one.
Okay. So just a couple things here to promote. FFT Open Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. All the spots for the FFT Open are on sale. The ones for me, Dave, Jamie, Heath, Jacob, Dan, they're going to sell out very quickly. Same with last year, like Chris Harris, Jake Seeley, Scott Fish. I'm probably forgetting some that sold out almost immediately. That's okay. We have a full roster full of the best minds in the fantasy industry. Plenty of leagues to join. It's $250. It's not cheap, but it all goes to St. Jude. It's a great idea. If you want to share a team with someone, we can certainly help you out with that. We can make a co-manager for you. And if you won your division last year, okay, because the division winners move on to a playoff just for the, it'll be 36 division winners this year. If you won your division last year, we will give you the first opportunity to get back into the FFT Open. You just have to be in contact with us. Our colleague Claire sent you an email. If you haven't responded and you didn't get it or whatever, just now is the time. Email
me. Mine.
Yeah, Jamie won his division. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. If specifically you won your division last year and you want the first dibs at getting back into the FFT Open, you can email me. Meanwhile, the CBS Sports Fantasy app is phenomenal. It's improved. Please check it out. Download it, CBS Sports Fantasy, and you can scan the QR code right here at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. All right. Segment called What's It Gonna Take for You to Blank?
AKA the used car salesman segment.
How am I going to get you into this Malik Nabers in round two car? Now, what's it going to take for you to draft Malik Nabers in round two? Everything here is about a buzzy player right now in camp. What's it going to take, Dave, for you to draft Malik Nabers in round two?
I told you I was going to sleep on it, and I did. And now what's it going to take for me to take Malik Nabers in round two? Okay. I'm going to open my draft room. My draft is going to start. It's going to be round two, and I'm going to click on Malik Nabers' name.
When in round two?
Right now it's late round two. Easier to do in non-PPR than half or full PPR, but I mean, it's just a matter of time before everybody buys right back into Malik Nabers. He looks good. It's a great start for him. There's no discussion about him taking it slow. And I know that the Giants are kind of slow playing his recovery, but he said himself the second surgery that he had, the timeline for that was reported incorrectly. He's been running routes for weeks, he said. He looks close to his old self. And so if he looks close now and it's July 31st, then by the time we get to early September, he should be his old self. And I did a double check on Matt Nagy and how he did with Allen Robinson in Chicago. And I almost think that's the floor for Malik Nabers because Robinson had 2 years there where he was averaging north of 8 targets per game, and he was getting 15.9 or more PPR points per game. That would be a disappointment for Nabers if you're taking him in round one, which is where we would be taking him if he had never suffered the injury and he went on to have a good year like he eventually got to doing. That week 3 game was kind of his breakout, weeks 1 and 2, not as much. I'm excited about him, and I don't think we're drafting him too close to a ceiling if we're doing it in late round two.
Jamie, what's it going to take for you to draft Neighbors in round two?
20, 35, 32 players get hurt.
No.
No, I don't want that. That would be crazy. I don't want that.
Well, where, so
I'm not taking it in round two.
You're not there yet.
No, and I won't be there.
Okay. What's it going to take for you? You know what? Can I pause here? There's been something that's bothering me. I want to be, Thomas, when we go to that full screen view and the three of us are on the side, I want to be on the top. I think I've earned that.
Are you serious?
Not really.
Yes, he is.
Yes, you are.
My face keeps getting covered up by the comments. That's not fair.
First of all, your microphone covers half your face 90% of the time you're talking.
All right. What's it going to take?
Never once in the history of this show, and I'll speak for Jamie here because I don't think he's done it either, have we out loud said on the air, I need my face to be featured prominently when we're showing graphics? They're not looking at your dumb face when the graphic is on anyway.
Yeah, I think I've earned it. That's the one. That's
out
the one.
Loud.
I said I earned it. Did I really say I earned it? I did say that, didn't I?
I think I've earned it.
Terrible.
Oh. You have had one of the worst weeks ever.
Terrible week. Terrible week. I should say the most insulting thing anyone's ever said to me, but I'm not going to.
I think you, let's go there because it'll make your week even worse.
Should I say it? Okay.
I don't give a damn.
Dave says to me earlier today, he says, hold on. He says, what if you, this is a like a text or a group, a G chat. What if you sneakily added me to your Baked Burger Dynasty League, put me on under a pseudonym? I wouldn't want to control anything, just to try and help you improve. So I put that in the notes and then I removed it as the most insulting thing that anyone's ever said to me. But yeah, it's okay. I guess I don't deserve to be on top there. What would it take?
You don't deserve to have help with your Dynasty League anymore. How many times have you won that league, by the way?
Zero.
How many times have you made the playoffs in that league?
One. Okay. Well, you're talking about just when it became Baked Burger? That's 3 years.
I don't know how long this dumb league's been running. I'm not in it.
This is a 13-year Dynasty League, but it's only been this iteration of it for 3 years. And I made the playoffs the first year and then tanked.
All right, so you got a 33% hit rate of making the playoffs. You're right. You don't need any help at all.
All right, what's it going to take for you to downgrade Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs amid their contract issues?
Holding out until the final week of the preseason?
Jamie, you look good on the top of the screen. Right
I'm
now,
in the middle.
I have to tell you, you look great. I think we should stick with that.
So this is an Azer sandwich?
Yes, exactly. I'm in the middle. All right. What's it going to take for you to draft Parker Washington?
Worst sandwich ever.
What's it going to take for you to draft Parker Washington in round five? This guy prays every day for Parker Washington. What's it going to take for you to draft Parker Washington in round five?
I'm five picks off right now, so it's not that.
Yeah. I've got him at the 5-6 turn, so I'm right there with you, James. I love him as one of those wait for it, got him, low-end number two wide receivers.
Are you buying the buzz on Parker Washington?
Yeah, I've been buying it since the middle of the offseason, so okay. Yes.
I know, but there's so many things not to like, I feel like. It's crowded receiver room. He's one of these guys that's had six good games in his 3-year career. He's a sixth round pick. That's usually not the guy that we in the NFL draft, by the way. That's usually not the kind of guy we want to buy into. Okay.
Well, Ryan,
there's obviously exceptions to draft stock, as we're well aware through NFL history, but it's like, how do you not buy into everything that is coming at? It's not just the coach. It's not just the teammates. It's the beat writers. It's everybody just saying just how great this guy looks. And every day, like you said, it's another Liam Cohen. He's the first guy I texted. He's the first guy in the building. He's doing this. He's doing that. Trevor Lawrence loves him. Like, I don't know. I mean, yes, it's a very crowded receiving core. When Travis Hunter's playing on the offensive side of the ball and Brian Thomas and Jacoby Myers and Brenton Strange, it's hard for him maybe to max out to what we would love to see, which I think is why we're not drafting him maybe higher than late round five, early round six, or a little bit later based on his ADP. But like, I don't know how you can look at it and say he's not the Jaguars receiver that you have to take first. And then when you start to look at him in relation to the blob, because he's in the blob, like, I don't know. I'm trying to just do it from a math perspective. I think he's going to get more targets. I don't think he's better than Jameson Williams, but I think he's going to get more targets than Jameson Williams. I think his offense, the way it's catered right now with everybody healthy, it's going to benefit Parker Washington a little bit better. So, like, that's one guy that I've struggled with. I think it's when you start to stack him up to, like, Carnell Tate and Marvin Harrison and his own teammates. Like, there's just so much more to love about Washington right now. So, yes, it could easily blow up in your face. I don't think you're making a huge investment by taking him in this range, though.
Agreed.
All right. One more.
By the way, what round was Puka Nacua drafted in?
Fifth round.
What round was Amon-Ra St. Brown drafted in? No,
he was a fourth round pick, St. Brown. Those guys had good rookie seasons. Puka Nacua is week one.
It's true.
First time he stepped
on the
field.
Everybody immediately comes into the NFL and does great things. Sometimes it takes a little time.
Sometimes there's a Julian Edelman and a Wes Walker.
That's fine.
Thank you very much.
And he fell in the draft because he was hurt, Parker Washington. He got hurt in his last year in at college. All right,
right.
Few
My
more.
My favorite part about what Jamie said is fire. That the price is a little prohibitive. That's it. Round five, round six. You might be able to get him later than that in your drafts because people, not everybody's going to be dialed into Washington, but I think he does so much for that offense that they need him to be a volume receiver in the middle of the field. And he can work three levels. He did it last year. He can do it again this year.
And listen, if you want discounted Parker Washington, just go get Josh Downs.
And aren't these the type of receivers that the offenses are gravitating toward anyway? Because they're looking for the next St. Brown. JSN. I'm not saying Washington or Downs are going to be that, but guys that are willing to cross the field, work on those horizontal routes and make plays after the catch. Like that's a way you beat that will, the high shell defenses that
coaches that will feature that in quarterbacks that will trust them.
All right. Man. What's it going to take for you to draft Bajal Tootin ahead of DeAndre Swift? Tootin getting a ton of buzz. And Chris Rodriguez says the plan is for Rodriguez to be ready for week one, but it's not a guarantee. What's it going to take for you to take Tootin over Swift?
Non-injury related?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Manongai is out at camp. And so if that lingers, then it's going to be even harder for Tootin to overcome. Swift will move up. We just don't know how bad the injury is for Manongai. It might just be like a weekend thing for him. It's going to be hard for me to move Tootin ahead of Swift. But the first thing that would have to happen is Chris Rodriguez stops being talked about in a positive light, maybe gets banged up again, and the Jaguars run out of options to put in the backfield behind Tootin.
Okay, there was an article in the Charlotte Observer from Scott Fowler raving about Bryce Young. I'm here to tell you, based on whatever institutional knowledge I've acquired from covering these Carolina Panthers for 32 straight seasons, that what Bryce Young is doing in practice right now in training camp is about to lead to a really good and possibly great season for him. What's it going to take for you to consider Bryce Young as a breakout candidate?
I just want to go to two words you just said in that quote. Four words you said for him. Great year for him. Because great year for him could be great. Could be fantastic. Could be amazing. Great year for him, for us, could still be mediocre.
Fair.
Certainly to add the context to that. His career high in completion rate is 63.6, yardage 3,011 yards. That's in 16 games last year. And his career high in touchdowns also came last year, 23 touchdowns. So if he can beat those types of numbers, that's a career year for Bryce Young. But we would never want somebody who gets 3,500 yards and 24 touchdowns and 9 interceptions as a must-start fantasy QB. That doesn't exist.
I thought we were going to review the Superflex draft we did yesterday. So one thing that stood out to me, you guys weren't in the draft, but one thing that stood out to me on top of Christian McCaffrey falling to 20th overall, stood out was
Superflex.
The second quarterbacks. There were 19 quarterbacks drafted in the first five rounds and then 11 drafted in rounds 6 through 15. And so I took Joe Burrow in the first round and Malik Willis in the fifth round. And then I was like, okay, which third quarterback do I want? So I was looking at it, you know, I was like, okay, if I get Darnold or Jones, just because I want a little bit of a safer floor with Malik Willis. And then it was like, you just start to see the trickle down. I was like, is Bryce Young one of those guys? And I think that's the only time you consider drafting Bryce Young. Like, there's so many number two quarterbacks that have so much more upside than him. I think the thing that you're looking at with Bryce Young, first off, how healthy are the offensive tackles? Because that's a huge, huge, huge issue. Now, I think more for him, because you see it with smaller quarterbacks, the interior is almost more important than the two tackles, because if they get pressure pushed back in their face, they're done. You know, so you want the tackles healthy, clearly, but like, he has a hard time seeing over the line to begin with. And, you know, if the middle is okay, it's still a little bit of benefit for him, but that's just, you know, nitpicking. But in any event, like, Tet can be great. Coker, we saw, could be decent, you know, and both, you know, clearly good for fantasy. I think losing Brazel and what they were hoping for him, like the sacrificial X, but just somebody that can stretch the field, like, now that offense gets tighter and it's not great for them. So it's just another, I don't know if we even mentioned Adam yesterday today, like, Brazel's out for the season.
I was going to mention that. And actually, I think this wasn't my original thought. I saw another, I can't remember who it was, another fantasy analyst talking about Al Brazel, like you said, could be that sacrificial X, but if he's out, Tetterell McMillan could go back to that role, and we don't want that.
They were talking about him being a slot receiver. Yep.
Right. We want him moving into the slot more, not being as, you know, not always there, but moving around more. We want the A dot probably a little bit lower for Tetterell McMillan. Brazel could have helped with that, stretch the field and allow McMillan to do more stuff that leads to more targets. So I don't think Chris Brazel getting hurt is a good thing. I don't know if it's a bad thing for McMillan. I don't think it's a good thing for McMillan.
Agreed.
Could to Jamie's point about pressure on Bryce Young, his completion rate when not pressured, 72%. When pressured, 45%. 5.3 yards per attempt. Terrible quarterback rating. Terrible EPA. 4.6% touchdown rate. That's actually the same as when he's not pressured. That's weird. He's not a great quarterback to begin with. And if those tackles aren't there, yeah, he's going to have a hard time seeing over the offensive line, and he's going to lose half a second to get the ball out. Problems. I don't see him having a breakout year.
The question I probably should have asked was about McMillan, but that's for another show. We're going to take a break. More news and notes just to catch you up on some of the stuff going on around training camp, and then we will read your questions, your draft-a-thon questions, your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We'll be right back. We are back. News and notes. Okay, Ricky Pearsall, knee injury. Deebo Samuel, one-year deal, could be worth up to $7 million. Christian Kirk has a strained calf. Jordan James, running back for the 49ers. He has a fractured rib and is going to miss time. So, Jamie Kalen Black, is that the guy you draft right now if you had McCaffrey and wanted his handcuff?
No, they just signed a handcuff.
Who?
Deebo.
Oh, Deebo.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at this point, it sounds like James is going to be fine for week one. This, you know, doesn't help his situation to win the job, but
right.
Isaac Arendo could be back. Like, it's just one of those things. I'll give you another scenario. I had a choice in the fishbowl, so a couple weeks ago, of the two 49ers running backs. This is my last pick. Two 49ers running backs and Marshawn Lloyd. And I took Lloyd. And I don't think there's the upside of Lloyd if there's a clear-cut handcuff for the 49ers. But it was, what happens if Josh Jacobs has legal issues at some point? Just clear a path, you know what I mean? So, like,
yeah, of course.
If you're starting to look at the 49ers guys and, like, okay, I'm waiting for the McCaffrey injury because of the history with him with 400 total touches, but there's no certainty, like, I may pivot just to Ray Davis at this point. Like, why not take a chance on just a handcuff with upside if that's what you're going for?
Especially
that's clear cut.
Especially after what you said about James Cook earlier in the show. And
I never said it.
Oh, yeah.
We never got into it.
We have so much stuff left.
Put a pin in that. Put a pin in that comment.
Yeah. I'm sure Pacheco was off the board, by the way, when you made that pick. Now Jamie has Lloyd.
No. By the way, may not be Pacheco.
Get out of here.
Could be Vaki.
Yeah. Oh, be it. No way.
You say that. Are you wearing your I Love Pacheco underwear today, or is that in the washing machine?
I have six of them, and today is the one day that I don't have it.
So you have one for every game that he's played over the last 3 years. Got it.
One for every 10-yard carry he's had. I was meant to make this joke. It's been a long time, but Jamie said he had Lloyd, so now I would say you can't triple stamp a double stamp. Chris Olave, four-year deal, $132 million extension, $90 million guaranteed. He was the number 7 wide receiver per game last year. It was his first season as a top 20 wide receiver on a per-game basis. Good news for Romo Odunze. He said something earlier in the offseason about how his foot was basically never going to be the same. He had a new normal, but he said, you know, too much was made of that. His foot feels amazing, Romo Odunze. According to ESPN, Jahan Dotson will probably be Atlanta's number two wide receiver. So if you're in a really deep league, Jahan Dotson may be somebody worth getting. Bo Nix looks like he's...
Did you catch the context of that, though?
No. That Zachariah Branch should be like a gadget player. It's a star.
Well, no, it was more of... It was the beat writer saying who stood out so far as the second best receiver or the third best option in the passing game behind London and Pitts, and that was the name he said right now.
Okay. Bo Nix, full go for training camp. Baker Mayfield seems pretty angry that he didn't get a contract extension. He seems very motivated, and he said he's in the best shape of his life. Kyler Murray not really having a great camp, it seems. Some tweets out there make it seem like J.J. McCarthy's been better than Kyler Murray. So I don't think, well, we'll see.
That would be incredible.
Yeah. Pittsburgh rookie quarterback Drew Aller having a good camp. Not that he's going to win the job, but for you Dynasty people out there. Ashton Jeanty said he was not in good enough shape last year. He stopped eating candy, and Ashton Jeanty is in better shape now. Dontavian Wicks
appears... Did he play basketball?
What's that?
You see him play basketball? The videos him playing basketball?
No, pretty good, I'm assuming.
I mean, he just dunks like crazy.
Shocker.
Dontavian Wicks appears to be ahead of Mekhi Lemon right now for Philadelphia.
See, these are the things that just should help you when you're looking at players when you're trying to get value. Dontavian Wicks knows the offense. Dontavian Wicks came with the guy who's the play caller. Dontavian Wicks has been in the NFL. Mekhi Lemon has dealt with an injury this offseason. Lemon will be better than Dontavian Wicks. It may take a few weeks, but Lemon will be the better player. So let this push his value down, and then you go get him.
Drake London proposed to his wife with Taco Bell. They were eating Taco Bell. That's pretty cool.
Now that's romance.
Michael Penix Jr. I hope no lettuce. Michael Penix Jr.
Right.
Michael Penix Jr. could be out another 4 weeks.
You marry me and have diarrhea.
Jeez. You know, the thing about... Yeah, forget it. Todd Monken said Harold Fannin Jr. is going to be a focal point. Tucker Kraft expects to come off PUP soon. Aaron Glenn said Kenyon Zadeek's going to be a huge weapon for the offense. Both Chargers offensive tackles have been cleared for training camp. D'Amico Ryans, the Texans head coach, he's been praising Woody Marks and Jaden Higgins. Couple second-year players there. Meanwhile, second-year receiver Jalen Knoll is going to miss a couple weeks with a finger injury. I mentioned Chris Rodriguez is practicing, and he had off-season foot surgery. He plans to be ready for week one. Left tackle Tristan Wirfs of the Bucks hurt his hamstring. He missed the first four games of last year, so it's early. Hopefully he's okay. Saints defensive tackle Brian Breezy. Does he have a torn ACL?
I believe he does.
Okay.
I believe the season's over. It's a small blow to what was already a defense that was in serious question.
Yeah. And Cincinnati defensive lineman Shamar Stewart, we thought based on the video, he might've had a season ending injury, but he doesn't. He avoided a major injury, but he'll miss a little bit of time.
Pete Prisco was in Tampa Bay. You can see some of the videos on, if you go to the NFL and CBS site on Twitter, you can obviously see it on CBS Sports HQ, and they run the recaps of those, and just Google it if you want to. But Chris Godwin, 100%.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
He also, Pete had a very funny bit with Baker Mayfield. He said, "Hey, I hear you're having contract issues," and he gave him $20 on the air. And he said Baker kept it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I hope Baker kept it.
That is awesome. All right, Jamie, I'm running very behind, and I have to get to the draft-a-thon questions that the people paid for. So let's go 2 minutes for this awesome James Cook stat. We're going to talk about him on the running back preview next week, but you won't be here for that. But let's put people in a panic before the weekend.
Yeah, you said awesome. It wasn't so awesome when I found it. So the last five rushing champions, so going back to Derrick Henry in 2020 through Saquon Barkley in 2024, so not including James Cook, so the five prior to 2025, they lost at least 848 yards and six touchdowns the following season. 848 and six. Now, that's not the average, because if the average, it would be worse, because McCaffrey only played four games after his 2023 leading the NFL in rushing. But if you're watching on YouTube, you see what it was. And Derrick Henry and McCaffrey both over 1,000 yards worse than they were the previous season. They both suffered significant injuries. You remember 2021 was Derrick Henry with the broken foot, And then 2024 was McCaffrey with the knee injury. But this is scary as all can be that this is what we could be looking at. Now, as we told you with the trivia question to start the show, Derrick Henry 2019 led the NFL in rushing yards, 2020 led the NFL in rushing yards. So it's not that far back that we're looking at somebody who's had some success. But the concern would be is clearly the workload. Now, in McCaffrey's case in 2023, he only had, I think it was like 230 carries. So a lot of what he did was as a pass catcher. So it's not necessarily the carries that scare you, but all the other guys in the year that they had leading the NFL in rushing were over 300 carries. And James Cook, first time in his career last year, over 300 carries. So I'm not panicking yet on Cook, but this was on top of all the workload issues that we were talking about with Saquon Barkley last year. If you remember, I kept saying the history of 2,000-yard rushers. There were only 8 of them. So a small sample size for both of those. Obviously, you see what happened to Barkley going from 2,000 yards. Same thing with Derrick Henry. 2020, he was over 2,000 yards rushing. 2021, injury and clearly a step back. So it is just something to keep in mind. It is something to be a little bit panicked about. I'm not going to say I may have placed the bet on the under on James Cook rushing yards, but something to consider if you're looking at that as well. Just the history here is not that great of what the recent history of what that's been for the leading rusher the following year.
You guys have heard us talk about how worried we are about players coming off of 400 touch seasons, and McCaffrey's coming off of 450 touch seasons. And obviously, if you're going to be the rushing leader, that means you had a lot of touches. Cook had 385 touches, so practically 400 touches last season, career high by a lot. At bare minimum, and this is the same advice I would tell you with drafting Christian McCaffrey, draft Ray Davis with a late round pick if you get James Cook, because Davis is actually a darn good running back when he's replaced James Cook and could be that. And locking up the Bills running back, that seems like a really good spot to have in fantasy.
You also, Joe Brady can't, you know, just again, so the story would be up on the site, making a case for all the first round players and why they could be busts. And so this is what led me down this path. But also Joe Brady has said, similar to what we hear, it's hard to expect it to play out. He wants to give Ray Davis and Ty Johnson more touches to take pressure off of James Cook. And then I think, I know Joe Brady hasn't done that as the coordinator, but I think Joe Brady's going to have them throw the ball more. So I think that was more of a McDermott holding Brady back from, I think, what he wants to do. And I think Brady's going to have this team be a little bit more pass happy.
Okay.
Man.
So that's just something to think about with James Cook. But honestly, I mean, look, yes, he led the league in rushing. He was less than 30 yards better than Derrick Henry. He was less than 40 yards better than Jonathan Taylor. They all had big rushing seasons and could regress. That's why, honestly, I think it's insane to draft them ahead of Christian McCaffrey. But I know other people feel differently. I mean, they're certainly younger. That's the good thing. But they all had a lot of touches and they all had a lot of yards. So
I think if you're legitimately concerned by this, and again, I'm not there yet, but I'm getting close. If you're legitimately concerned by this and you're stacking up concerns for McCaffrey and concerns for Cook, to your point, Adam, McCaffrey's upside is better. No matter how these guys play out, if they both play the season, no injuries, I'm taking McCaffrey 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think everyone is. Okay, yes. Draftathon questions. Andrew bought two questions. Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your generosity. Andrew's in a 10-team PPR league. You start one quarterback, two running backs, two receivers, and two flexes. There are a lot of good quarterbacks available in this league. Do you think it's best to wait on quarterback until after the top-tier QBs have been drafted? It's a 10-team PPR league with one QB, two receivers, two running backs, two flexes. Should you wait, Dave?
Generally, my answer would be yes, but I wouldn't pass up. And we talked about this on the quarterback preview. Highly encourage everybody to watch it or listen to it if you haven't already. But you want to steal a quarterback. And if Lamar Jackson's sitting there in round 5, Drake May is sitting there in round 5 or round 6, why would you pass up that type of value? Why would you give that value to somebody else in your league? So you can have the idea of waiting for a quarterback, but don't be a fool. And if you've got a chance to get a stud quarterback later than the ADP says, you should take it.
And also in a 10-team league, the onesie positions, not everyone feels this way, but you could say, I want to make sure I'm elite at quarterback and tight end, or at least one of them, because, you know, you can... you can have a bigger advantage there. You want as many elite players as possible, and it's more doable in a 10-team league. All right, another one from Andrew is, I've listened to your show for a few years. I've gotten some great advice on players, music, movies, and shows. You're welcome, Andrew. I've never heard how you guys got started in the industry. Could you share how you got your start? 30 seconds each, Jamie.
Yeah, 30 seconds is
45. In the fantasy industry?
Yeah, sure.
I was a newspaper guy for the Palm Beach Post covering a variety of teams, including the Dolphins. Michael Fabiano had just left CBS Sports, and I was hoping to stay in South Florida. I was honestly looking for really a foot in the door to get to CBS and maybe continue just being an NFL guy, but this fantasy stuff has just been so much fun. Working with Dave and Adam has been amazing. Adding Heath was even better, and Dan and all the other cast of characters. So why leave when it's just such a great ride?
Dave, how'd you get your foot in the door?
I don't think I can do it in 30 seconds. The 30 second version would be, got my foot in the door with CBS. People knew that I loved fantasy football, eventually got the chance to write about fantasy football on NFL.com. And then CBS brought me over a year before they brought Jamie in.
I would have gone with Kerry Wood got hurt. Dave was great at what he does and everybody noticed it.
Dave met a girl who wanted him to move out of his parents' basement. And so he started rapidly applying for jobs online and fell ass backwards into a job covering pro wrestling in Florida, which in and of itself is a dream job. And then parlayed that into being a fantasy football writer. The girl is no longer in his life. He married somebody else.
And I did student radio at the University of Miami and interned for what at the time was College Sports Television, CSTV in Manhattan. They hired me out of college. They became CBS Sports Network. So I was in like the CBS Sports family. I was working in New York from 2007 to 2009 after I graduated in 06. I wanted to move back to Florida where my family was. CBSSports.com was in Fort Lauderdale. So I transferred there and I started, Dave and Jamie were two of the first people I met. They were like, hey, why don't you go host this fantasy football podcast? And that was 19 years ago.
We never said that.
We never asked for you to host our podcast.
No, sorry. You didn't say that. But someone said it to me, you know, like
we used to have a radio station in the building we were at, and we would record our podcast in there. And then one day this kid just showed up and said, "Listen, I know a lot about podcasts. I think I should host a show. I think I've earned it.
I should be on the top." Absolutely. All right.
There's so many terrible jokes we could go on.
Matt Walters with this question here. Thank you for your donation, Matt. 12-team league with colleagues. What should the tiebreaker be? Who has more in their divisions? Who has more wins in the division or most points for the season?
Most points.
Yeah.
Most points is the easy tiebreaker for everything. Because that's something that you actually earn as a fantasy manager, the points that you get based on the lineups that you set. And it's really hard to have that end in a tie.
You guys don't remember saying that to me? Hey, why don't you, new guy?
Hey, new guy that I only know because your brother and I went to college together.
Yeah.
Why don't you host this show and annoy us for 15, 20 years? Once a year, somebody's like, hey, didn't you go to college with Adam's brother? And I say, yeah. And they go, so that's why Azer works at CBS. And I go, no, actually, Adam did it on his own.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Tyler in New York City, who maybe I'll run into tomorrow. I believe injury proneness is one of the most overrated risks in fantasy. Is there anyone this year that's being unjustifiably downgraded due to perceived injury risk?
Downgraded due to perceived injury risk? Christian McCaffrey.
Right. I think Mike Evans.
But if you're going to say that for McCaffrey and Evans, then you might as well say it for everybody, because we're literally talking about Evans, who got hurt multiple times last year, and McCaffrey, who has suffered significant injuries to his lower body after every single season he's had 400-plus touches. And so everybody has injury risk. It's football. Freaking Patrick Mahomes got hurt last year and tore his ACL. But some players you could look at and say, all right, there's an elevated chance that they could get hurt. But I don't hate the way that Tyler's looking at it, which is if injury risk is a concern for everybody, then why consider it for anybody and just draft based on nobody getting hurt and you don't have to fear it at all. And that's not a bad way to go, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm. I do think that the doctors, the sports doctors, that, you know, you see on Twitter and whatever, or probably any sports doctor would say that getting injured, that you automatically have a higher chance for re-injury. I do think
soft tissue injuries are obviously scary, you know, for these guys, because they tend to linger. High ankle sprains. Now we're learning about the PCL injury and how bad it is. You know, it used to be like the ACL tear was the end of your career. And now the PCL injury is the one that's keeping you out for a significant amount of time, or just completely limiting your play, like we saw for Bowers last season. So
yep.
I think, just to kind of pivot off of what Dave said a little bit, I think when you have guys that have these track records, and obviously it's the veteran guys, usually the ones that are approaching 30 or in their 30s, you kind of know what you're dealing with here. And then the other part of this, I think, is what he's talking about. The question is, like, we're downgrading George Kittle, we're downgrading Malik Nabers, we're downgrading Tucker Kraft, we're downgrading the guys that are coming off of injuries and waiting to see. So, like, you asked about Nabers, like, what's it going to take to push him into round two? A month ago, we would have laughed in your face if you asked that question, because we were never getting to the point of thinking of him in round two. We were running the other direction and thinking of him as a round four, right, round five pick, you know, at that point. So as we get more updates and reports, you know, so Kittle could come off the pup list, Kraft come off the pup list, and these guys are
off the pup list today. Huh? He just came off the pup list, Kraft.
Okay, so there you go. So now we may see his ADP rise. You know, we said it with the quarterback show that Mahomes could be one of the biggest risers because of his name and the fact that he looks okay if that continues to be the case. So I think any of these guys that are coming off of injuries are the ones that are going to have their ADPs rise. Conversely, to the point, we're pushing these guys down because of their injury situations right now.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. We got about 6 minutes left here. So this is from Richard Todd. He says, "Dear Chad, Boomer, Glenn, and Ken, Jets quarterbacks, I'm embarking on my first Superflex league this year. Any advice on where to find good rankings and strategies, and how would my Superflex league differ from my normal PPR league?" Dave?
Superflex obviously means that there's a higher priority and premium on quarterbacks. That's the highest scoring position in fantasy. When you can start two good quarterbacks, you're usually ahead of the curve in the rest of your league. But having two quarterbacks doesn't mean you have to draft two early. You could. I think this year, because of the depth at the position, you could go with drafting one early and one in like the early middle rounds and feel really, really good about your team. Obviously want to prioritize quarterbacks that you think are going to be able to start 17 games and not potentially lose their job in the middle of the season or late in the season, like a Jacoby Brissett, like a Geno Smith, certainly like a Kirk Cousins. And every quarterback basically comes into play. You'll see a quarterback from all 32 teams drafted. Yes, even the Browns. And that's all the more reason why you should be interested in getting a couple of them. You want to have three good ones. One should be great. If two are great, go for it. If you happen to be a savant that can find good quarterback value in the middle of late rounds, and this could certainly be a year where you can do it, you could wait at that position and just load up on running backs and wide receivers with maybe your first four picks, and then try and find this year's version of Trevor Lawrence, of Matthew Stafford, of Jackson Dart, and your team will be better off for it. If you draft Malik Willis and Willis ends up being a stat machine, because he's not losing his job, they just paid him to be the quarterback, your fantasy team will benefit oh so much. Same thing with Tyler Shuck. Same thing with Baker. If Baker stays healthy, now that we know he's motivated for a contract, he's got to steal money from Prisco. That's huge. And it's not a terrible idea to draft three of those quarterbacks, hoping that two of them are your starter every single week. And if they perform as top 12 quarterbacks, you're way ahead of the game.
And we've
so a few things just to piggyback off that. Thomas just showed the story that we wrote about the draft.
That was me. That was me.
Oh, Adam, excuse me.
I've earned it.
Wow. Top of the page, and you're putting up graphics.
It's true. I should have also assumed.
Did you just put yourself on the top of the page right now?
I did.
A couple things about that draft. And first off, I think the biggest thing is know if it's 4 points or 6 points for passing touchdowns, because 4 points does not mean you have to go early on quarterbacks, especially if it's minus two for interceptions. 6 points would definitely make it more of a priority for quarterbacks. Take a look at what Heath did. If you're inclined to go quarterback, he had the seventh pick. I adjusted that, by the way, because Heath was originally supposed to be 12, so I gave him the seventh pick. So he started quarterback with Drake May and Jaden Daniels. Look at his running backs and receivers. If you are so inclined, his receiving core is awesome. Rashi Rice, George Pickens, Emeka Abuka are his three guys. And he has Breece Hall and Tony Pollard at running back. He did surprisingly, had Sam Laporta He was on the clock till the very last second and took Jadarian Price instead of Sam Laporta. Or maybe it was Pollard instead of Sam Laporta. It was Pollard. He took Pollard instead of Sam Laporta. I was like, there's no way he's not taking Laporta here. And he didn't take Laporta. Guess who took Laporta the same round? I did. Screw you, Heath. So that's one strategy of taking quarterbacks early. Another strategy is you can see, I'm going to give you three different ones. Go to Todd Rones' team. He sort of waited on quarterbacks. He didn't take his first quarterback until round three. And he went back to back in rounds three and rounds four. So he got Bo Nix and Jackson Dart. So started with two stud running backs and then waited on quarterback a little bit. And then go to Brandon Howard's team, because this is really if you want to avoid quarterback and just sort of build around it a different way. He didn't take his first quarterback until Patrick Mahomes in round three. His second quarterback is Shedeur Sanders. That's the only two quarterbacks that he drafted. So he's banking on Sanders being the starter there. But he's also going with the approach, which you can. I know Adam talks about this a lot. You don't have to throw the quarterback into the super flex spot. It's obviously ideal because you're going to get the max amount of points if those guys do what they're capable of doing. Again, 6 points versus 4 points. This is a six-point league. But look at his starters. His starting lineup features Devon Achane, Derrick Henry. His receivers are CeeDee Lamb, DJ Moore, Tyrell McMillan, and Pitts at tight end. Jameson Williams is his flex. That's pretty impressive. Again, quarterback not great aside from Mahomes, but he could have a hole at the super flex spot while everything else is great. And again, he could fill the super flex spot with something else.
See, that's where I would go with the 4 point versus 6 point, is that if it's a super flex at 4 point, you don't have to use a quarterback in the super flex if you don't want to. But quarterbacks are still going to be in pretty heavy demand in a 4 point league in super flex.
Adam, I did it again. Sort of just passed on receivers. So my first pick was Burrow. I had the 12th pick. So I went Burrow, James Cook. Might be disgusting at this point. Burrow, James Cook. And then the next turn, I took Amarian Hampton and Saquon Barkley.
You're totally souring on James Cook.
No, I love what you did there. I mean, I like to zig where others zag, I guess, in Superflex, although more people are doing it now. But I just don't prioritize quarterback as much as I used to, because I think there are 18 quarterbacks that I'd be happy with as my starter in a 1QB league. So as long as I get two of those 18 in a 2QB league, then I'm happy. I'm going to skip around a little bit here. Real quick, Jamie, what are your thoughts on Emmett Johnson as Ken Walker's handcuff?
Seems like he'll be the guy, but I would be surprised if he's the full-time guy. If Walker misses any time, I think we'll see DeMarcado. I think we'll see Breshad Smith. But Johnson, if you're going to handcuff Walker at this point, that's the guy to do it.
Agreed.
Dave, Joe from Indiana has the third pick. He's going to be getting Ja'Marr Chase. It's a non-PPR league. Would you take Chase Brown if he falls to him in the second round? Would you take T. Higgins if he falls to him in the fourth round? In other words, does having Ja'Marr Chase prohibit you from taking other Bengals?
No, this is one of the offenses where I don't know if I'd encourage it, but I'd be totally fine with it. And we heard Burrow this week talk about how he loved both of the Chases, Ja'Marr Chase and Chase Brown, as being pivotal parts of the offense. There were many games last year. I think it was like four or five games last year where all three had good games for fantasy, but certainly many games where Brown and one of the receivers had a good game, and that was usually Ja'Marr Chase. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, he said we're going to try to get the ball in Ja'Marr Chase's hands as much as we can, but a close second is Chase Brown. I'm so excited for this offense.
I'm excited for Chase Brown. I know I'm the outlier thinking that he's worthy of a first-round pick.
No, he's first-round pick. Absolutely. He's first-round pick in the CBS Sports ADP.
Hell yeah, man.
Fantastic. I'm glad people are on top
of it. I'm sorry. Excuse me. The consensus rankings. The consensus.
Okay.
No, I think you're right.
That's even better, because then we're all kind of on the same page and we're all seeing it the same way. If that Cincinnati defense takes the step forward that they want it to, and I think they might, it's going to favor Chase Brown to get more carries and more touches and put up more points. We've seen him wreck games late before. I like this guy a lot. I've toyed with the idea of putting him ahead of McCaffrey. And now I think I've got to toy with the idea of putting him ahead of James Cook after what Jamie unearthed today.
Six games last year after Burrow came back from his injury, he was over 22 PPR points per game. Yep. In the seven games that Burrow played that he was healthy, so taking out game two, he was at 20 PPR points per game. And if you give him the week two game where Burrow got hurt, it's still 19 PPR points per game. So in eight games with Joe Burrow on the field, 19 PPR points per game or better. So it's just a lot to love. And Samaje Perine played in most of those as well.
Yeah, but not all of them. And I wonder if some of those games with Perine out may have helped push that
they
over
did,
20 PPR points.
And there were two games without T. Higgins where he had something like 8 targets in both games or 10 right. targets. He got a lot of production in the passing game without Higgins or without Perine, but he also did the same thing in 2024. He was even better, I believe, in terms of points per game in 2024, the second half when he became the starter. So he has shown, no question, Chase Brown has shown more PPR upside than either James Cook or Jonathan Taylor. He's not as steady. You know, he's probably not as talented. But in terms of upside, I don't even think there's a dispute. He has shown more PPR upside than either of those guys.
And he's based on where you see some drafts, like you can get him middle of round 2.
Yeah.
Because people still like, and I get it. You like Achan better. You like Jenty better. You know, that pushes, you know, Chase Brown down a little bit. And then you get in the mix with the receivers. Man, imagine starting your team with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Chase Brown.
This is a great question that we'll have to
address AJ Brown
some other time. Am I the only one who remembers the front half of last season for Chase Brown? Or are we just throwing that out? We should talk about that more in depth because we got running back previews coming up and we will get to it. But
great.
There's so much potential for him. But you're right. That did happen. We can't just ignore it. Of course,
Burrow. But a lot of that was without Burrow.
Yeah, most of it was. Last question here. I don't have a name here. We'll call it from...
gimmick infringement.
Oh, Dave, who's this one from?
It's Claude from Quebec, Canada.
Hey, Einhorn, Pedactor, Melissa, and Finkel. If we're considering Jerry Maguire a sports movie, then we have to consider Ace Ventura a sports movie. It starts with the theft of a team mascot, goes down the path of sports psychology, meets multiple players and front office staff, and ends the movie on the football field. And I'll add, and Dan Marino is in it.
Well, that's right.
Do you idiots feel like admitting that Jerry Maguire is not a football movie yet?
No. Ace Ventura is a great football movie.
One of the best.
It is the funniest football movie ever, for sure. Thank you to Claude for this wonderful email.
Can you name 3 other football players in the movie?
Yeah, the 2 offensive linemen that carry him out of the Isotoners commercial.
Those weren't football players. Those were thugs.
They were henchmen. Yeah.
Henchmen. Good word.
Finkel.
No, like real football players.
Why am I blanking on this?
No, there were no others.
One is a very prominent media member in South Florida.
Joe?
Nope.
Joe Rose? No, not Joe Rose.
Same, rhymes with Joe.
Tim Bocamper?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm going to go listen to Line Up by Aerosmith right now from that movie. We will talk to you on Monday on Fantasy Football Today as we get ready for running backs and wide receivers next week. See you later, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Paramount Podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Plutophone. If you know the name of the movie you'd like to see, just stream it for free on Pluto TV, where all your blockbuster favorites are landing all summer long. Catch Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Fantastic!
The Matrix Trilogy.
Welcome to the real world.
Mean Girls.
Shut up!
Titanic.
I'm the king of the world!
And so much more. For showtimes, press nothing. They're free 24/7.
That is so fetch.
On Pluto TV, stream now, pay never.